My presentation is going to focus on some of the key results we've achieved, noting what Theo had spoken of and also the framework mentioned by Dr. Down. This is the presentation plan. We're going to talk a little bit about performance-based contracting, the approach used by the Rebuilding Basic Health Services project. We're going to talk about some key results, some lessons learned, and the way forward. So to ensure that we're all on the same level, we refer to performance-based financing as contracts between a financing agent and an NGO, with payment depending on achievement of performance measure that may include coverage targets and quality norms for a set of services. Now, I will not dwell much on the background of the health system's challenges. I think Theo and Dr. Down have mentioned quite a number of the challenges we experienced, which led to the onset of the Rebuilding the Basic Health Services project and performance-based contracting. So the rationale for performance-based contracting, as Dr. Down mentioned, we had post-conflict problems and which demanded rapid improvement in coverage. Owing to the war, many of the inhabitants had no access to health services. The Ministry of Health capacity to deliver was very limited, so she had to rely on assistance from the NGO partners. Okay, and fortunately, because of the conflict, these NGOs were supported by donors to come into the country and bridge the gap of service delivery. So we recognized from the experience presented by RBHS that PBCs do make sense. And so later on, you will hear how much we have adapted this process as one of our health financing and health system strengthening strategies. So how do the PBCs work? And I must say that we have now moved from PBCs to performance-based financing, and I'll explain the difference later on. The NGOs are paid for performance towards achievements of the preset targets. Dr. Down mentioned the morbidity problems we had with MDGs 4, 5, and 6, the problems with malaria, okay, the problem with low coverage of EPI. So RBHS had, based on the health challenges, had to sit with the NGO partners to decide on what were those key targets we would reach to ensure that the ministry achieved her targets related to the health outcomes amongst the population. So we agreed on service delivery indicators and administrative indicators. Theo spent a lot of time telling you how important it is for the system to be able to respond so that services can be effectively available. So we looked at service delivery indicators and administrative indicators. Administrative indicators attracted penalties. If you did not deliver, if you did not reach your target as an NGO, you were penalized. You did not get the bonus you would have gotten had you met all of the administrative indicators. So bonuses to all stakeholders was provided, to even the service providers. And the PBC is actually a data-driven and problem-solving orientation. The aim is to increase quality and efficiency. So for the service delivery indicators, we were looking at the quality of services, and for the administrative indicators, we were looking more at the efficiency, the effective management of those health institutions. So we have measuring performance. We had 6 administrative indicators, and the size of the potential penalty was 5%. The number of service delivery indicators were 12, and the size of the potential bonus was 6%. The frequency of payment was quarterly. Now, to be able to do that effectively, we had to think of a strategy. So the RBHS designed a strategy for bonus payment, but I would hasten to say that evolved over time. Initially in 2009, it was like, okay, we gave you this contract and a certain percentage will be set aside for bonus payment, and you just pay, you know, the bonus according to your own guidelines. But later on, over a 1-year period, we realized that waiting for 1 year to pay bonuses to health workers was not motivating enough. And the intent is, if you want to make a difference, you have to ensure that the bonus is paid on time. And if you delay, you then reduce the momentum that the health workers would have to perform. So RBHS then changed the periodicity from annual to a quarterly payment of bonuses. And then there were no guidelines. Initially, there was just some agreement reached between RBHS and the NGOs, but now RBHS, based on its experience, had to develop the guidelines, the bonus strategy guidelines, which we have to date, and the ministry is building on that to carry out its performance-based financing programs. Now, the bonus earned by the NGO was allocated based on performance of the health facilities. Bonus lost by a facility or an individual due to poor performance is taken up by those performing better. How is it? This is a formula that we use. So we consider, RBHS considered all of the facility at the same level and all of the staff in a given facility were entitled to a certain amount of bonus. So if one institution did not perform well, then the other institutions that performed better got more money than those who did not perform very well. So it actually gave rise to a healthy competition between NGOs to deliver on the targets. And then the NGOs placed bonus. How did the NGOs use the bonus? They had 80% of the 100% was used for facility bonus, the payment of health workers. And 20% was used for the administrative aspect of the management of the project. Say, it's like the county health team or the NGO management got 20%, and the health services component got 80%. So the health facility bonus was then split into two parts. At the individual level, the staff got 50% of that bonus was used for direct pocket money to healthcare providers, and the other 50% was used for facility improvement. Dr. Down told you about some of the conditions in some of the facilities. So 50% of that money, of that bonus you earned, had to be used for improving your facility, making it more friendly, that people feel more comfortable when they come to your facilities. Now, how did we determine the amount of bonus to give to an NGO? Okay, we had to ensure that the NGO did data verification routinely. Not RBHS, but the NGO, they had the responsibility to ensure that those targets set with RBHS were actually being achieved by the health facilities. So they had to do verification of all of the information that would have been gathered and sent to the Ministry of Health. Okay, because RBHS had to say to the ministry, we've done this for you, these are the health outcomes, this is the data we have on the different indicators we agreed on. Okay, and then that would be submitted to the Ministry of Health. And then our BHS would go back and do a counter verification, okay, randomly selecting three facilities in each NGO area. Theo showed you the map of Liberia where the NGO, where the RBHS projects were located. So they had to randomly select three facilities, okay, and the counter verification was to validate that the NGO actually did send in the true and correct data and that they actually performed according to what they had reported. Now, where does the penalty come in? During the counter verification, if RBHS found that the information you supplied was incorrect, then you attracted a penalty. Because when you did verification, you had to be sure that RBHS was making available to the ministry the true and correct situation. So then if you didn't give that kind of information, you attracted a penalty. And the penalty, like I said, was up to 6%. 5%, sorry. Now, what were some of the interventions? I've told you about the bonus, the strategy, the different mechanisms. So what are some of the supportive interventions within the framework of the BPHS that RBHS carry out? We first look at system support interventions. They supported the development of the national policy and strategy. Dr. Down mentioned that RBHS was a part of that process. They tried to work with strengthening community health, because if you don't strengthen the community, if you don't get the community involved, if you don't get the community aware of the different health problems, if you don't get them to know what contributions they can make to the development of health services in their different localities, you wouldn't get very far. So they had to work with the communities to establish that. The quality of care, Dr. Don mentioned, the quality of care indicators that RBHS helped the ministry to develop, and in fact, she mentioned that they're trying to support the ministry to develop the quality of care indicators at the individual and the system level. We did, RBHS did pre-service and in-service training. Dr. Don mentioned the challenges of human resources. Many of the service providers had not had pre-service training for many years owing to the civil conflict. So they play a major role in ensuring that people were brought up to speed technically, and infrastructure improvement, HMIS and MNE strengthening. I think that's one of the strongest contributions that RBHS has made to the health system within the Ministry of Health and Social Welfare. This is functioning so perfectly well at the moment, so much so that we're even moving to greater level of the HMIS methodologies. So, having done all of these system interventions, what were some of the achievements we've seen so far? It's one thing to intervene, and it's yet another thing to see some results. And these are some of the good results that we've seen in HMIS timely reporting. Dr. Don mentioned how challenging it was to, in fact, get the information for the first report of 2009. Because the health information system was just so poor. But you can see over time how much improvements we've made. And no stockouts at quarter one. I mean, it was so difficult to find the basic essential drugs. There was always stockout of these drugs. But through the intervention of RBHS, strengthening the support system, we have less problems with stockouts and staff timely payments. Sometimes staff went without payment for like 3, 4, 5 months. But now, on a regular basis, staff are paid their salaries or their incentives. Then we now take a look at the interventions related to maternal, newborn, and child health services. I will not dwell much on number one. Theo told you you know, the contribution RBHS made to strengthening the emergency obstetrical and newborn care, and then they developed maternal and newborn referral protocol and job aids. That didn't exist. RBHS was able to help the country develop those job aids and standards. They trained trainers for post-abortion care. During the war, there was a lot of reported cases of abortion, and so sometimes that led to untimely death, but RBHS was able to help the country train trainers on post-abortion care. It supported the ministry to adapt the IMNCI course from 11-day. I think most of you who are into public health or child health know about the WHO IMCI training program, and it's a very long program. It takes 11 days, but RBHS was able to work with the ministry to reduce that to a six-day program because of the human resource problems. And then we train trainers on home-based life-saving skills. Many of the deliveries occurred outside of the health facility, so what did we need to do to support women who sought services outside the health facilities? That training was done, and it has helped the ministry create a very strong bond and referral mechanisms between the service providers at the home and the health facilities. Some of the strategic innovations in the line of maternal, newborn, and child health included these few innovations you see here. And I like to speak mainly of the rapid scaling up of HIV testing and counseling sites and the construction of maternity waiting homes. This, we are currently studying it to see what contribution it actually makes to reducing maternal mortality at the facility level. We've seen in some counties that RBHS supported that maternal mortality reduced significantly. Could it be associated with the maternity waiting homes where women who were at high risk or women who were pregnant and nearing term were brought into these homes and managed? And should they experience complication, they would be within the confines of medical assistance. So we don't know what significant contribution that has made, but it seems to have made a difference. We tried to give the mama baby kit. You know, the TBAs in Liberia depend on the payment by families to them for delivery services performed. So if we're asking them to come to the health institutions to have their deliveries done, you're actually taking the business away from the traditional midwives who had for many years, you know, received payments for these deliveries conducted. But through the Mama Baby Kit, we were able to establish a very good network with the TBA. So instead of getting nothing, you know, for the deliveries conducted, they got some gifts or some incentives in return, and that seems to have helped a lot. So speaking of results in the area of child health, I'd like you to take a look at this slide on malaria prevention, malaria treatment. You see that when we started off, and malaria is the number one of the number one killers of children in Liberia, and you can see from the interventions by RBHS and her partners, you can see what the skill now looks like. Look at fever treated with anti-malaria under 5 per 100,000, per 1,000 under 5. It steadily grew. The same thing as the ACT treatment steadily grew as well. And this continues. You will see the drop there at quarter 11. But it could be associated with the decrease in the number of facilities reporting, because by then, RBHS had transferred most of the facilities to the ministry. So that could be related to that. And I'd like you to take a look also at the maternal health data here. And I've mentioned here some of the key interventions that we think made a difference in this steady rise in IPT2 and facility deliveries. Theo mentioned that we took it from 21, RBHS took it from 20 to 68%. I think that was very dramatic, and we're beginning to see that using these approaches, things are changing. Now, family planning, we'd like to take a look at family planning. Remember I said earlier on we were looking at MDG 4, 5, and 6. So now look at family planning. These are some of the strategic services we carried out in family planning. And for the balanced counseling strategy, we are ensuring that we use this method because we could attract penalty from USAID if we did not take into consideration the CIHR amendment. I think you all know about that, to ensure that women have access to every available method and you help her make an informed decision about what method of family planning she would use, and not the health workers imposing, you know, her own ideas and suggestions on the women. So we stuck to that and made sure that we carry that out to the letter. So if you look here, these because of those interventions, this is the way the graph on family planning, the CYP, actually looks for the health facilities supported by RBHS. Dr. Dan mentioned this about the performance scores of the health facilities run by RBHS and those by the non-RBHS providers. You can see that specifically in the health service quality, right here in the middle, 48% amongst the RBHS facilities and 34 in the non-RBHS facility. And you can see the total score of 65 and 54 difference. Now, so where are we going? Having learned from RBHS that performance-based does make sense and it works and it can make a difference, we are now moving to the future where we want to strengthen counties' capacity. Well, at the moment, let me say, the ministry has adapted the PBF implementation in 11 counties, and this is supported by the pool fund. Dr. Dahn mentioned the establishment of the pool fund. It's a body of donors, okay, and USAID through the FARA mechanism. They're helping us reach these counties with performance-based financing. And for the future, we want to take it to the next level, the secondary level, whilst maintaining the primary level interventions with performance-based financing. And for the secondary level, the World Bank is going to support us, you know, do performance-based financing at the secondary level, which means the hospital level, whilst we continue with the primary level. And we want to also continue more with the contracting in. Dr. Vamsi will talk more about that, building the capacity of the county health teams to actually manage the contracting in mechanisms. We started with Bone County, and we're now going to move to Grand Bassa County. And basically, I will say thank you. That's a short story of where we've come with PVC. Thank you. Thank you.